Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's call. All participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing star then one on your touch-tone telephone. Please keep in mind today's conference is being recorded, and I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Daniel Allen. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. This is Daniel Allen, CEO of Evercell, and I would like to welcome everybody to today's call. We have quite a full list of participants, so I appreciate everyone joining. First, I would like to provide a couple of legal notices, which I shall try to read quickly. Statements in this announcement that are not historical facts are forward-looking statements. Forward-looking statements are subject to uncertainties and therefore may involve risks. We caution you not to place undue reliance on forward-looking statements. All such statements reflect expectations only, and there can be no assurance that such expectations will come to pass. Due to Evercell's limited number of shareholders, Evercell is currently not obligated to report financial or other information publicly or to the SEC. Evercell chooses to voluntarily report information periodically at the discretion of management. However, management may change Evercell's reporting policy at its discretion and without notice. The information provided in this call and any other information provided by Evercell as to its operations, financial condition, prospects, or any other matter do not purport to be complete, and you should therefore not rely on the financial information, on the information being provided by Evercell as being all the information you might need to make an investment decision. Okay. Now I will turn to discussing our company. I've been asked to start with a bit of background for those investors on the call who are new to the Evercell story. So I thought I would start with a brief introduction along those lines. I officially joined Evercell in, I should also mention before I begin, that I'm here with Jim Gerson, Evercell's chairman, and our board members are on the call as well. So I officially joined Evercell in January of 2013. At that time, Evercell had approximately $18 million of cash from proceeds from the sale of Zipcar and some legacy items, which included a NOL, as well as a small crab and medical device businesses. Obviously, Evercell's history goes well beyond that, but I thought I would start when I took over. We subsequently shut down those businesses, cleaned up some various legal matters associated with those businesses, but most importantly, at the outset when I joined, we used the $18 million to acquire the 80.1% ownership in Printronix that we own today. Over the ensuing years, we've brought in a new management team at Printronix, great new management team, and we've made enormous number of changes to that company. One of which was that we carved out and sold one of the divisions. We paid off all the debt that we raised from the acquisition. And over the past few years, we have used the cash that we generate at Printronix for other investment opportunities. And we continue to do that and to plan on doing that, essentially using Evercell as a holding company. It's been about 7 months since our last shareholder update, when we published our FY 2018 results and the accompanying letter. On today's call, we want to take the opportunity to provide an interim update in advance of a shareholder meeting that we expect to call in a few months. We plan to publish our FY 2019 annual results and letter much earlier than we have in previous years, but on today's call, which we have not done in the past, we would like to review updates on our investments in Printronix, as well as SharpSpring, discuss a small new investment that we will be closing later today, and discuss some Evercell corporate items, and then take questions. So let me start with Printronix. Printronix ended its fiscal year about a month ago at the end of March, and I'm pleased to report it had another successful year. The continued success was largely the result of the significant efforts over the past three or so years to focus on optimizing the core business after the sale of the thermal product line and rethinking many aspects of the strategy and operations to reduce our cost structure and help optimize our pricing and go-to-market approach. So we are in the process of finalizing the financial report for the year, but I wanted to share some preliminary numbers based on where we think we will come out. We expect revenue for the year that ended in March to be approximately $57.6 million. Now, that number is down slightly from the $61.0 million in the previous year, but it's roughly in line if you take out the two very large customer wins that previous year from the numbers. Furthermore, Line Matrix hardware sales, we expect for this year ending in March, this past March, will be approximately $28.7 million. And to put that in context, that's up from $27.1 million 2 years ago. The company expects to report adjusted EBITDA of $14.4 million in FY 2019. And to put that in context, that compares to $15.4 million in 2018 and $9.0 in 2017. Cash generated in FY 2019 was approximately $7.7 million. One note on that is that we had a particularly strong Q4 of sales, and that led to approximately $2 million of cash collections that would have normally been collected within the fiscal year, but were pushed out into fiscal year 2020. Now, once again, please note that the numbers I just read through are preliminary, unaudited, and may change as financials are finalized and we complete the audit process. A couple of comments on the business overall. Though that the overall market for printing has its obvious challenges, Printronix's business, I think is worth pointing out, is attractive, particularly due to its unique business model. And so that business model is characterized by a highly dominant position in its market niche with hardware sales that historically have had about a 50% gross margin. It has an attach rate, meaning that if you buy the printer and you want to use it, you have to buy our consumables for one, as well as some other things like spare parts and service. And that, for the most part, is recurring revenue, and that historically has had approximately 70% gross margins. And despite the relatively small size of the business, Printronix has a really impressive set of global Fortune 500 type customers, as well as a very well-respected brand associated with reliability in the industrial printing market. So it's a particularly unique and interesting business, we believe. That's it on Printronix for now. Let me turn the discussion over to SharpSpring briefly, and let me give you a little bit of context there. We are certainly quite happy with our investment in SharpSpring, which we made roughly somewhere between a year and a year and a half ago. We invested an aggregate of $10.1 million in SharpSpring, and that was comprised of $2.1 million in public shares and $8 million in a convertible note. The price of SharpSpring stock in the public markets has increased from less than the $4 per share when we first started investing to over $20 when it closed yesterday. The increase in the price reflects, obviously a number of factors, including the company in our mind being highly undervalued when we came across it. The company over this period has been able to use the capital from our convert in part to increase its growth rate, and most importantly, certainly is the strong execution from the management team. The current stock price, just I wanted to point out based on some questions that I've gotten from shareholders, should not be mistaken for a translation into the value of the convert, which is highly illiquid. We have chosen not to convert our shares because of the significant value created by the interest, which is 5% per year, and that is paid in the form of shares that are valued at the convert price of $7.50. So if we were to choose to convert prior to maturity, like today, we would lose any of the unearned interest. However, if the company chose to do a forced conversion, meaning they convert us, all of the interest accelerates. So further, it's worth noting that given the size of our position and the limited trading liquidity of the stock, we expect that if we were to convert into seller position, for example, it would take quite a bit of time and would require us to potentially accept a discount to that value. So that's a bit of context on SharpSpring. Third, I wanted to just review balance sheet a bit. and discuss cash, which I also get questions on. Between approximately $17 million of cash on Evercell's balance sheet prior to the small investment that we're going to be doing today, and Evercell's pro rata portion of the excess cash at Printronix, which is equal to roughly $16 million, Evercell has approximately $33 million of cash available for investment. I want to turn the conversation over to new deals, which is a topic that we're spend a significant amount of time on and are very excited about and very focused on. So we continue to pursue new investment opportunities, and we do so really in three categories. So I wanted to try to paint a picture of how we spend our time and what we're looking for. The three categories is A, related to the printer segment that we're already in, and so it's looking for opportunities where we can leverage our industry knowledge, our existing assets, and relationships that we have. So that's the first. Second, the B is in new platforms, so call these transformational investments that are unrelated to the printer segment, where we can acquire at least a majority ownership is what we're looking for, or a control position, and we're looking for deals that are in the $20 to $50 million of equity in that category. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. And then third, C, is in opportunistic but smaller, higher risk, higher reward type opportunities. So let me go through each of those briefly. Regarding A, the printer-related companies, I wanted to give a little color on a business that we spent an enormous amount of time on this past year that we chose in the end not to do. So we were very close to acquiring a European-based printer business that was in the color, inkjet, and textile markets. The investment would have been a standalone acquisition separate from Printronix, but it would have leveraged all of our industry knowledge and expertise. So we spent about 6 months on this opportunity. We put together what I at least thought was an extraordinarily impressive team of industry experts to assist us in diligence and then ideally to help us run the business afterwards. But we chose to walk away from the opportunity during the final diligence process due to concerns we had regarding some of the information we learned during the process. Disappointing, I think we made the right decision. Very interesting business, but we decided not to pursue it in the end, I think for smart reasons. On the second category of new platform investments, we continue to look for operating businesses in standalone, non-printer related new platforms, and as I said, that's kind of in the $20 to $50 million of equity, which could translate to $20 to maybe as much as $250 million of enterprise value. And in those, we're looking for majority ownership. In this area, we're focused on finding unique situations that are not sought after by the broader private equity industry, possibly due to some undesired complexity. I think Printronix is a great example of that. We target, kind of similar to Printronix, undermanaged companies, and we'll attempt to replicate our Printronix playbook, and so we're open to a wide range of opportunities in that category. In the third category of this opportunistic but smaller or higher risk, higher reward opportunities, and I should mention that SharpSpring investment falls into this one, we will be closing today on a small new investment. We will be backing an entrepreneur who is building a business in the influencer marketing software space. We are in the process of acquiring the assets and the team from what is a larger digital marketing company that had bought this business, which continues to operate as a standalone business. They had bought it several years ago, but recently decided that the business that they acquired was not core to the parent company's long-term strategy. So they're looking to sell it. They spent some time in the market with a number of large media companies. They were very close to a deal to sell it for somewhere in the $15 to $20 million range, is my understanding. But that acquirer backed out last minute due to some strategic reasons that had absolutely nothing to do to the company that it was buying. And so we're going to be buying the team and the assets for $1 million plus another $1 million potential earnout. We'll be putting another $1 million or $1 million to $2 million, I should say, of cash into the business over the coming year on the balance sheet for growth. and just a little bit more about the business itself. The entrepreneur who founded the business, he leads the business today and will continue to be leading the business. He started about 7 years ago. He and his team built some software and a brand and relationships in this industry that they've used internally to help them provide agencies services to help brands run influencer marketing campaigns. This software helps brands run these campaigns, performs an array of analytics to help them achieve their objectives and minimize risks of being associated with unwanted content, and a whole lot of other things. The company plans to relaunch in the coming weeks, so I'm not going to talk about too much of it right now, but it's going to be leveraging this existing software to create a SaaS or software as a service model for the brands to use the software themselves. For the purposes of this call from a shareholder perspective, I should mention that we expect revenue in the first year or two to be non-material, but we are very, very excited about the longer-term potential of this business, largely due to what I see as a this entrepreneur being an extraordinarily talented guy with a great team to get behind. The company will be launching the business under the name of Current Technologies. The website will be, when it launches in a few weeks, will be www.current.tech, tech spelling T-E-C-H. Once again, I just can't say how excited I am about this opportunity to work with this entrepreneur and the team he's built. I think I'm going to learn a tremendous amount from it, and hopefully we can help continue to make him even more successful, and I think the deal structure is attractive as well. So very excited about that. Let me summarize about the business, the businesses. So in total, just to summarize the different categories we've talked about, so Evercell owns 80.1% of Printronix, continues to own that, debt-free. It owns its investment in SharpSpring that I discussed earlier, and owns this new investment in Current Technologies, the cash on the balance sheet as well. And we continue to be focused on taking these assets, optimizing the value of these assets, and looking for new investments where we can do kind of repeat the playbook. Let me talk a little bit about Evercell from a corporate level for a moment. We are preparing for a shareholder meeting, which we intend to hold this summer. In advance of that meeting, we are working on some changes to Evercell's governance, which will include potentially adding some new board members. We are also exploring changing the company's name based on some requests from shareholders, and we are currently changing the name, I guess, because the name reflects a battery business of the distant past and not what we're looking to do for the future. I also want to focus on the topic of some of the challenges shareholders have in part with their brokerage firms and holding Evercell stock. We're keenly aware of these challenges. We continue to evaluate the structure of Evercell in order to best position it for the long-term value, for long-term value creation. We are very focused on making whatever changes make the most sense for achieving this. At this time, we have no immediate plans for plans to recommence public reporting, but it does remain under consideration. I'm about to open up for questions, but before that, I just do want to express our gratitude for the commitment and efforts of our employees, our board members, in particular our team at Printronix, who has worked extraordinarily hard over the last many years, to our partners in our SharpSpring investment, to our long-term shareholders, some of whom are very long-term, for their continued support, in some cases patience. We believe we have demonstrated the ability to find undervalued businesses and with a very intensive hands-on effort create significant value from them. We will continue to focus on building this long-term shareholder value by finding new opportunities, maximizing the value of our underlying assets, and we appreciate your support in doing that. So at this time, we welcome any questions.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. To ensure all participants have a chance to ask their question, we do ask that you limit yourself to one question at a time and to re-queue for any follow-up questions. And once again, that is star then one for questions. And we'll pause a moment to allow questions to queue.
while we're waiting on questions, I will do some vamping. I also forgot to mention that we will also try to upgrade the website, and we also would like to try to do more calls like this in a more frequent way to provide more communication to shareholders.
And it looks like we've got our first question from William Pike with Pine Street Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi. My name is Bill Pike. I'm a shareholder longer than you were. I go all the way back to the time that it was spun out of energy research, and I've had the ups and the downs, needless to say. Given the illiquidity of it, I kind of stopped paying attention a year ago. I actually don't know what ShopSpring is. Could you give me a little history and background? What do they do? What have you done with it since you've taken it over? And I believe you said it's a public company. What is the symbol? I just need a total education on this.
Let me not take too much time on this call because there's a lot of information out there, particularly on their website, and I'm not here to discuss ShopSpring's business in particular, but in short, their ticker is SHSP. We did a convertible note. It's an inbound marketing automation company. Its targets or its customer base tends to be smaller digital marketing agencies who then resell that software to their customers, so they use it on behalf of their customers. It's a broad suite of inbound marketing automation software platform for digital marketing agencies to use for their customers. I think that's the easiest way to describe it. And there's more information in previous information that we've posted, as well as certainly on their website, and it's a public company, so you can read all their information. Thank you for the question.
And again, that's star one for questions today. We'll go next to Alan Mitrani with Silver Lake. Please go ahead.
And thank you. Thank you, by the way.
Hi, Alan Mitrani from Silver Lake. Thank you. I actually was on the call, but somehow was not connected well enough. I missed the first part, so I apologize for this. But can you tell us what the revenues were in Printronics were, and did you report any earnings or anything? Do you mind repeating that? I'm sure I wasn't the only person to get knocked off.
Hey, Alan. Good to talk to you. We did, I can go through it again. I'll go through it quickly. I'll go through it quickly. The revenue for the year was 57.6. We expect it to be, I should say. The EBITDA was adjusted EBITDA was approximately 14.4. The cash was approximately 7.7, and these are preliminary numbers, and may change as we finalize them. I gave information earlier on how that is in context to previous years, which I can share with you after the call. Let me just, if I may, just go back to Alan and see if that answered his questions or if he had a further part to his question.
Hi, I'm sorry. Part two of the question was just on Printronics. Did the business generate free cash flow given the high EBITDA and what's normally low CapEx?
Yeah, so, sorry, it was $7.7 million of cash flow.
Of free cash?
So there's 7.7 was the free cash, the free cash flow for the year. That's after, that's after CapEx, and it also that compares to how we've reported cash flow in the past. That number, as I said earlier, but to repeat since you weren't on that part of the call, was that it was approximately $2-ish million less than it would have been had we not had a very strong fourth quarter where. Receivables from the fourth quarter were pushed into the following quarter or two based on being back-end loaded.
Got it. Thank you very much. I'll get back
in. No problem. Does that? Okay. Great. Thank you.
And we'll go next to Anthony Lamport with Lambda Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Yes. How many? What's the fully diluted shares of Evercell? I mean, we'll see that when you get the annual out, but approximately how many million shares fully diluted outstanding?
Yeah, it's. I don't have the audit in front of me. It has not changed meaningfully, materially since last year, but it's approximately 33 million.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it hasn't changed for quite some time, but that's all in the audit report that we published back in November. So I can send it to you if you want to send me an email if you don't have it.
No, I had that. I just wondered whether it changed. Okay.
It has not. It changes slightly year to year because of some small amount of preferred and some small number of options and et cetera, but none of that I would put in the material bucket.
And again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question today. And we'll take a follow-up from William Pike with Pine Street Securities. Please go ahead.
You said going public is under consideration. Could you give me an idea of what are the main considerations for and against? Now, I'm a sophisticated investor. I can probably guess what most of them are, but I'd like to hear your reasoning in particular. And the question is, if your stock is undervalued, would it not make more sense to go public simply because you have a better currency with which to do acquisitions?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I certainly understand that logic. Let me try to respond to the first part of your question, which is that there's certainly a number of things in the pro column. There's a number of things in the con column. I'm sure you could outline in many of them in the challenges column. I'll start with that, since I think the pro column is probably self-explanatory, is requirements from an audit perspective. There's a number of requirements, including 3 years of PCAOB level audits. We don't have that, or we haven't had that yet. We did start doing a PCAOB audit a couple years ago. This will be the third year that we have one. There's also timing requirements in terms of when you have to report. As you probably have seen, our accounting process of doing the audit based on the time when we publish it. We publish it to shareholders within days or weeks of it being finalized, sometimes the same day. And so it takes a long time. It takes a long time for a number of reasons, one of which is that we don't have at the Evercell level where we have to roll up all of the financials. We have me at the and some accounting help. At the Printronix level, we have a global business that requires rolling up, and doing a fairly complex audit where the auditors fly around the world and go to all of our facilities, et cetera. And we have an audit fee that takes into account and reflects that they are given a considerable amount of time to do it and aren't required to do it within the amount of time required for a public company filing. So there's a number of issues regarding resources that are required to do it. There's a number of issues regarding costs required to do it, and there's a number of issues regarding simply regulations and rules that are required to do it. And then there's a number of issues regarding the assets that we have and the quarterly nature of there's a number of issues around that as well. Those are in the, the con, but in the pro category, there's clearly the benefits of being easier to buy and to sell, being able to trade to transfer it into brokerage firms, the liquidity point for using it as currency, although you need to find a target that is interested in Evercell shares, obviously, if you're going to be using it for currency, and I would say that's a smaller subsegment of the businesses that we look at, but there's many other benefits as well.
So, got it. Could I just get your email address before I attempt me to start watching more closely?
Yes, no, thank you. You can email me at dan@evercell.com.
That's pretty easy. Okay. Okay, I'll get back in queue.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from James Fold with the Fold Corporation. Please go ahead.
Thank you. You've done a great job operating the company, and I guess following up on the previous commentary, the market price obviously is not reflective. If we take a market value of about $83 million based on 33 million shares, and you take the cash of $33 million and the sharp spring at $20 value of $28 million, you end up with Printronix being valued at $22 million, which is about 1.5 times EBITDA, which is, I think we all would concur, incredibly cheap. So how do we recognize value for this great investment you've made without making it a public company?
Well, I will take your commentary, I guess, as a compliment. So first of all, thank you. So I see my role primarily to maximize value of the investments and value for the shareholders, and not as much to opine on what the appropriate metrics are for what a company should be valued at. I would say, as the largest owner and shareholder of Evercell, I share your desire for the value of the value to be as great as it can be, I think in terms of your math, I think the facts speak for themselves, and you can calculate what value you think is appropriate.
My understanding is, from an accounting perspective, this year will be the third year for you to have the PACOB audit fulfilled, so that sort of criteria, which is time-driven, should not be a problem going forward.
You are correct on, as I said, about the third year.
Okay. And I just had one quick question. Who are the company's major competitors in Printronix? Or are you just so dominant that you really don't have any?
No, well, thank you for the question. I could speak on this for a long time, and so let me try to keep my answer relatively brief, but let me try to be expansive enough to give you a flavor of it. It really depends on what you define as the market. And so obviously in the printer market, which is what, we solve the problem for our customers of printing. So somebody mm-hmm. needs to have ink on a piece of paper, and there's a large number of companies, obviously, that do that. However, in the niche that we're in, which is in industrial printing, meaning that our customers tend to put our printers in what we call the concrete part of the building, not the carpeted part, so it's not in the finance area, it's actually on the factory floor, it's in the distribution center. Give you an example. One of the largest trucking companies in the U.S. has one of our printers at every dock door. And so when their trucks leave in the morning, when their fleet leaves in the morning filled with orders to deliver, they have to print waybills for each of their shipments. And so they have to print high volume, in a dirty, dusty, outdoor kind of environment. And for that, we are the best product for their needs. Oh, they also have to print a multi-part form, so there's a yellow, a white, and a pink piece of paper. And they have to print through all those. You can't do that on a laser printer. You could switch completely to digital, but then all of their drivers and the recipients of their package would need to have the ability to receive, to change the way that they do business. And so they continue to print on multi-part forms. You can imagine the yellow, white, pink, or whatever sheets, where the driver keeps one and gives the other to the recipient. That business process exists in many applications. It exists in factory floors, for example, where cars are manufacturing, or where car companies are manufacturing cars, and it in car companies where they're manufacturing cars, and they have a process and they use our printers in many of the large car manufacturing plants around the world. And so in the niche that we are in, we are actually the only company that makes these printers. And so we have, and that's in part drives our ability to capture 50% margins on the hardware, over 70% margins historically on the consumables. And if you need one of our, if you have a fleet of these printers, a fleet being, you know, a large number of installed base, and you want to replace them, you can call anyone, but they're going to be our printers because we're the only company that exists that makes them. So that's in part why the business dynamics of this business are so unique and interesting. Now, that said, companies could switch to laser in some cases. They could switch to digital. They could switch to printing nothing. They could switch to lower speed, what's called serial matrix printers. So if you rewind in your mind to when we were kids, we had these printers where the printhead, you know, went back and forth. And those exist, and those are okay. There's high-end versions of those, and those are okay for lower volume needs. But if you have a high volume need in an industrial operation where they're never, you know, or they're rarely going to break, and they can be exposed to the elements, and you need to do a impact printing, meaning you need to print across multiple part forms, then you know, we're the best and pretty much only game in town. There's one caveat, which is that in certain Asian countries, in China, Korea, Japan, where they use kanji characters, so non-ASCII characters. There is a company that used to exist. It's kind of winding itself down, other than in Japan where it continues. And so in the past, we've had direct competition in China in particular, meaningful competition. And when I bought the business 7 years ago, we estimated our market share in China was roughly 50-50. I think it's gone from 50-50 to my guess is it's gone up. To a point where it's going to probably asymptote to close to 100% over the next year or two in China because they've gotten out of that market. And so that's a great opportunity for us. So a long answer to try to better...
Now, that's a great answer. Thank you very much.
So that's in part why we love the business so much is because of its market position.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Bruce Paul, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I know that you have 500,000 shares of SharpSpring that you paid about $4 a share for. Do you ever consider selling them? I understand why the other million or so share, the convertible stock, you wouldn't get rid of because of the PIK, but what about the 500,000 shares that you own?
Yeah, so thank you, Bruce. Hello. Good to hear from you. And you actually win the award for being the first person to dial in for this conference call, so we appreciate your continued enthusiasm and support. The answer to your question is we can't, is the simple answer, and it's contractual based on our convert.
Okay. I understand that. I know... It's difficult for you to say whether you're going to become a reporting company, but I know a lot of people that own stock, and I know we're all in favor of you doing anything you can to become a reporting company. The negatives that you pointed out, every company overcomes those, so I think you should really make this one of the priorities. Now a question. I know it takes a long time to consummate an acquisition. Are there any companies you're looking at right now that you've started that process that we might see something coming in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months?
Yeah, well, absolutely. But I'll focus on the might. So there's a number of companies that we are looking at that we are working on. But I try to avoid, particularly in settings like these, talking about businesses that we're looking on because I can't predict whether they're going to happen or not happen. So yes is the quick answer to your question. It takes a while to do large transformational investments. It takes quite a long time, obviously, and it's important that we don't do one for the sake of doing one, and so we're very cautious about trying to only do deals where we can have results consistent with the results that we've had to date, but that is what we spend a lot of time doing. But I can't commit to a timeline for it, certainly.
And I just want to congratulate you on the spectacular job you've done over the past 3 years, and we're happy the direction you're going in.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It's much appreciated.
And we can go next to Jeff Steineman with Jonas Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dan. You've done a remarkable job with Avercell. There's no doubt about it. And now I'm happy that you're going to try to get more information out on a regular basis. The quick question I have is, what is the interest income going to be for the convertible bonds to be reported as of March 29th?
Well, Jeff, it's all in the filings. It's all public. It's all stuff that we've disclosed in the past. So it's 5% of $8 million. You can do that math. It's $400,000 a year. I don't know the date that you set specifically, presuming that's end of year. I don't know how that lines up exactly with the one-year anniversary of the convert, but you can do the math of 5% times 8, $400,000, divide that by 7.5 is the convert price, and that's the number of shares.
Yeah, I had 53,793. Okay, so it's at 750, that's what I was curious at. Okay, so that will be a line item on the income statement.
I don't know if it'll be a line item, but that is the amount of interest.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan.
No problem. Thank you.
And we can take our next question from Jonathan Avadelli with XLCR Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for taking my question, and hello, Jim. I just want to say congratulations that you built a nice little business here, and happy to be a shareholder, a new shareholder, that is. And one quick question for you, just on housekeeping matter. The cash, Dan, that you cited, that was roughly $33 million. That does not include, or does it include, the pro rata share of the cash generation at Printronics this past year?
That includes the pro rata. So that's the two numbers put together that I referred to. So it's the $17 million or so on the Avercell balance sheet minus the investment I described for today, and the $16 million, which is the pro rata share of the excess cash, I should say, at the Printronics balance sheet.
Right.
Excess meaning over the working capital that we use on a daily basis at Printronics. And that is the excess share. That's the Avercell 80.1% share. And so those two numbers combined come to $33 million.
Got it. And so that would be basically your year-end cash pro forma March 31st is what you're saying?
Yeah, roughly. There will be a couple million dollars more on top of that, most likely in the audit report, because there's working capital on the balance sheet of Avercell. Of Printronics.
Understood. Okay. And then, I guess the larger picture question, Dan, just as I try to evaluate the intrinsic value of Printronics, can you give some comparables in the printing industry in terms of valuation metrics that you think are appropriate to consider, given, your pretty intimate knowledge here and your recent valuation here of the European business?
John, I think it's a thoughtful, certainly a very reasonable question, and I do have a view on, but it's of such a wide range that I don't think it's applicable here, because if you look at companies, you can look at companies that are in, like, declining cash flow businesses, and you kind of range of those tend to be, or you can look at large, conglomerate, printer businesses like an HP or et cetera, and you kind of what those ranges tend to be. Or you can look at, for example, companies in Asia that trade sometimes at very high multiples, and you can, see what that range is. And so there's so many different ranges here that for me to pick one, I think is, potentially misleading, because there's no good answer to that question. The best I can do is you know, tell you what the business does, and glad to share what some of those comps are for each of those types of companies. But I, based on your background, I presume that you have a pretty good sense of those. So sorry it's not a more definitive question, excuse me, definitive answer, but yeah, probably the best answer I can give.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your candidness in there. But, yeah, so I shine a little bit of light on Printronix. It sounds like the business is relatively stable at this point, right? The restructuring is sort of behind, the massive restructuring is behind you. You're continuing to optimize the business, but it looks like it's pretty stable here with 2 years of roughly $60 million in revenue and roughly $14.5 million of EBITDA. And it sounds like you have meaningful share opportunity in Japan. But for all intents and purposes, is it fair to characterize the business as a pretty mature, stable business in your mind, with most of the restructuring largely behind us?
Yeah, and just one small correction is it was China, not Japan. But no problem. I think directionally, that's how I would characterize it, is that it's a, certainly in the printing industry, and so we shouldn't lose sight of that. But within the industry, it's a pretty unique, interesting asset for the characteristics that I described. And
right.
The numbers historically speak for themselves, but I can't predict how that will look in the future. But I know that we have a very committed management team working very hard to execute on pretty much the plan that you just described.
Right. And last question I have is just on current technologies. It sounds like a very interesting opportunity. It must be a very high risk, high reward situation, right, to merit just a couple $1 million of investment, but a fair amount of your time, it sounds like. Can you talk about the sort of the attractiveness of something that small to you, Dan, and why you chose to spend your time sourcing an asset like that? It's relatively, this is more on the venture side of things, right?
Well, so, it's a good question, and I wouldn't say that I actually did spend my time proactively sourcing it. In a venture deal, you would tend to own a relatively small percentage of a deal for an investment. We were able to buy the assets and, own the, 100% of the business, less a very significant portion that we're sharing with the management team. I don't expect to spend an amount of time on this anywhere commensurate with the amount of time I spend on the other businesses that we've been discussing, nor on looking for new businesses. This was an opportunity to invest a relatively small amount of dollars for us as an organization and make a investment behind a person and a team who I believe is very impressive, highly talented, and I hope and expect that he can make this extremely successful, at which point it would be a meaningful investment for us in terms of return. If given an opportunity to generate $100 million of return, for example, not saying that's what's going to happen here, but as an example, I'd rather put $1 million in than, $99 million in order to generate that return. So I think about it in terms of return potential, but yes, this is a low dollar, high risk, high reward opportunity that that I'm quite excited about, to that third bucket that I described earlier. So it's not leveraging our printer business, which is the first one. It's not a new transformational kind of platform, although it could turn into that as we see more opportunities in related spaces around this. So it could turn into the kernel of a new platform. But it's an opportunistic, interesting deal that seemed to be sized right in relative to the amount of time that I expect to commit.
You're two for two here in terms of SharpSpring and Printronix, and they're different skill sets, and one's value and one's growth, and you've built a nice portfolio, and excited to see what you do and meet you in person in the shareholder meeting. So thanks again for all your hard work. Appreciate it.
Yeah. let me just, if I don't want to contradict your compliment, so thank you for that. I would just point out that SharpSpring is very different than Printronix, because we do not run SharpSpring. That's entirely run by the management team. That's an investment, not a wholly owned kind of company there that we manage. But it was a value opportunity when we first saw it. And so we identified it as a business that was highly undervalued, and we continue to look for types of businesses like that that we, you know, believe are undervalued, and appreciate the fact that there's a talented management team there that you know, runs it on a very much on a day-to-day basis. I am on the board of the company, but I certainly don't run that business.
Understood. Yep. Hopefully I'm saying that the completely different valuation metrics for both businesses. It's not an easy thing to have a skill set that allows you to be successful both deep value and high growth, but you've been able to source two incredibly great businesses.
Well, I hope to find more. We certainly spend a lot of time looking for them. They're hard to find, but I'm optimistic that we'll continue to be able to keep this track record going. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You got it.
And we've got a follow-up question from William Pike with Pine Street. Please go ahead.
Hi. In light of the strength of the economy, a number of companies are finding it difficult to keep people. Could you address Printronix and, to the extent you can, SharpSpring, and certainly this new acquisition? Is there any, given these are small companies, any critical person you might be at risk of losing, or even non-critical that could be an issue? And with respect to the new acquisition, or the investment, I think if I recall the early part of the conversation, you said there's one really smart guy that runs it. The fact that the company is available, or that you take your size investment, suggests that maybe this guy is a software guru but did not have anything, and therefore maybe that's the direction you want to go in. Could you address all of that?
Can you just repeat the last part of it, that your reference to the gentleman and he's a software what?
I use the word guru, you know, an expert, that he's very good at creating the software but not good at marketing it. Is that why the company has needed your investment at all?
I'll take the last part of the question first, and then can move back to the first part. Sure. So on the last part regarding this new opportunity, I don't think that's the case at all. He's a very talented young gentleman, a very impressive guy. It was part of a larger company, so he sold his company earlier to a larger company. The larger company had its own strategy and its own priorities and decided of what it wanted to do with his company. And while the acquisition from that larger company that it was a part of made sense when they first did the deal, and maybe for some period afterwards, it didn't make sense today. And so the reason that we had the opportunity to buy it was twofold. One was because they're looking to sell it, and second is because there was a busted deal process from some others who were going to pay significantly more. And so I feel like we had the lucky opportunity to meet him at the right time. Hopefully he feels that he had the lucky opportunity to meet us at the right time, and I'm very excited to support him where we can, but really let him be the driver of building the business. And so I guess time will tell, but we're, I personally am very excited to work with him, and I think he's a terrific entrepreneur.
Do they have the marketing that they need to get this product sold?
Well, they're going to be launching in the next few weeks, so I'd say let's give them time to build it's an ongoing business, but it was a service business as part of a larger business, and so we're carving it out from that larger business, and they're going to be back to being a standalone business. So I'd say given the stage of the business, time will tell, but I think that as risk, reward, and talented individuals go, I personally just feel lucky to have met him and excited to be working with him.
Got it.
And excited that he chose to work with us. They actually had another deal that they were about to take and chose to walk away from that to do our deal, in part because of the chemistry between him and us. They literally walked away from this other deal that they were about to consummate because of his enthusiasm to work with us. So it's mutual. But we're in the honeymoon period, and so results will obviously be forthcoming.
Okay. And what about personnel issues, any turnover concerns at Printronix?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a legacy business. It's a difficult business, and we have a terrific team. And so the team we have there has lots of opportunities to do lots of things. They get recruited all the time. Sometimes some people choose to leave, and it's frustrating, and I tend to get on the next plane and fly to wherever I need to fly to go meet with the person and try to convince them to not leave. And fortunately, I've been pretty successful at that, but I'm not going to be able to keep the track record. So, yeah, that's a concern, absolutely. But, you know, the leadership of that company, I do my best to, one, treat them well, two, is provide good incentives to keep them sticking around. Three is, where possible, provide the leadership for, you know, for a clear set of goals. And, you know, so far so good. I think, you know, but yes, absolutely. It's a big risk. And unlike a business where it's a global business with a relatively small, you know, revenue base for the size of the global footprint. And so we don't have lots of backup people, you know, around the world. So it would be quite a challenge if one of the key people were to leave. So I agree with the premise of your question, and it does worry me.
Got it. Thank you very much. I have no more questions.
I don't think it's much different that we could do about it, but it is certainly a risk factor. Thank you.
And we have another follow-up question from Anthony Lampert with Lambda Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Nan, it certainly worked out, these acquisitions and investments. As you go forward, do you see yourself having a carried interest in any of the investments or so as you had in SharpSpring, or would you just be compensated from Evercell?
So the compensation structure is the same across all the investments, is that I get, or my firm, which sometimes is me, sometimes it includes other people, depending on the investments, gets a 20% carry on the profits. So Evercell gets its money back first, and then Corona gets a 20% incentive fee for managing it. And so there's very good alignment, which is, one is that I'm the largest shareholder of Evercell, so looking for investments where we can all make money. And second is that I get paid if the investment is successful, and not meaningfully if the investment isn't successful. So yes is the answer to your question. That's how we've structured the compensation.
Also, do you see yourself managing these companies, so and you know, watching over them in some way, so this compensation then is sort of separate from Evercell, or what?
So I do manage, so Printronix, SharpSpring, I'm on the board. So yes, I do manage the investment. That is true. I'm not sure I captured your question, but the way that we've structured the compensation at Evercell level is that to align interest well, to provide incentive, the structure, and it hasn't changed, it's been the same, is that Corona gets a 20% promote or carry on the investments.
All right, so that in the 1.5 million shares that are owned, of SharpSpring, 20% carried interest exists on just those shares, or does it include the public shares, or what?
So there's a 20% carry on the investment overall.
Overall, okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's of profits, just to be clear.
Yeah,
in case
carried it, yeah, right. Okay.
And if nothing if we don't make money.
Yeah.
So yes, so that is the plan going forward as well on investments.
Well, I'm finished with the question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for the question. And I think that's actually all the questions as I look at the list of people in queue. So with that, I will pause in the event anyone has last questions, but it looks like there are none. So I will thank everyone very much for taking the time to join the call today. I hope that I answered everyone's questions in a way that reflects kind of a, you know, the ability to, within what I can say about the companies. and really appreciate the continued support from our shareholder base. I know many of you have been shareholders for a very long time. Some of you have been more recent shareholders. Most of you I don't know. Some of you I do, and I've enjoyed getting to know you. But it's a privilege to have this platform, and I hope that the best is yet to come. So thank you so much, and I appreciate your time, and do feel free to email me with specific questions, although I'll just caveat that I do not answer any questions that to any individuals that are not that I don't share with everyone. And so apologies if I can't answer your question specifically. So thank you very much.